Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box, bettingbook.com's MLB betting podcast for Thursday, June 15th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This edition of the Bettors Box presented by DSI Sportsbook. Head on over to DSI, use the promo code BTBRadio, good for a $10 free bet just for signing up, and an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. Our Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format will be back starting next week, so we'll get back to some sense of normalcy here. Apologies for a little bit of a late edition here for Thursday. I'm still trying to get back into the Eastern time zone mode, get back into the work mode. Crossed all four time zones twice. I can tell you, I like to do a lot of situational handicapping across all sports, particularly the daily winter sports like the NBA and the NHL. And travel is tough. I mean, I'm not a fine-tuned athlete by any means, but travel is very difficult. Getting back into a rhythm and a routine, very difficult as well. So that's something I'm battling with a little bit here now. But I promise you things will get back to normal beginning with Monday of next week, which also means another edition of the Monday Mailbag. Please send me some questions. Haven't had a whole lot of listener participation here. Maybe everybody's a little bit burned out with the end of the NBA season and now just the dullest part of the sports betting calendar, where we've got just baseball going on, occasional UFC, some WNBA, some arena football. Soccer is going on every day, of course. But in terms of the major sports and the major sports betting markets, as well as college football and college basketball, not a whole lot going on until late in August. So I certainly understand if people are taking a little bit of a break. But if you're not, please send me some of those Monday mailbag questions so I've got something to answer for you on Monday's show. Don't forget about my picks and analysis article, which goes up every day over at bangthebook.com, daily fantasy article as well. Tons of great content over there, both written content from some of my colleagues and then also our matchup data section. Find a lot of good stuff to pull from there. You got some trends in there, how things have done with certain totals, how teams have done lately, teams as a favorite, teams as a dog, all that type of stuff, all included over there at bangthebook.com. And also don't forget about the daily contest that we have going on, our daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, and then also those contests with the cash prizes for top monthly win percentage, top ROI, and top number of units won. As far as today's show goes, we'll have a little bit more of a traditional format today with our Beyond the Box Score segment. We'll also go down the lines and then preview the weekend ahead. Let's go ahead and get started here today with Beyond the Box Score. I want to talk a little bit about this Dodgers and Indians series. Dodgers have taken the first two. I think they should sweep, but we'll see what happens here in this early start time on Thursday. Those early starts a little bit difficult for those West Coast teams. Maybe part of the reason why we're seeing some Indians and Josh Tomlin money come in. I'm not going to use this as a commentary about the Indians. I just don't want to talk about them right now. I'm going to leave it at that. But I want to talk about the Dodgers. This is my first chance to really get a good look at the Dodgers. I know they've got some guys at the bottom of the order that don't have particularly strong numbers. Right now that's Logan Forsythe, Jock Peterson, and then Yasiel Puig, who hit a two-run homer in Tuesday night's game. This is a relentless lineup, in my opinion, because you've got guys 1 through 9 that are dangerous. You can't make a mistake to Jock Peterson because he'll hit it out of the ballpark. You can't make a mistake to Yasiel Puig because he'll do the same thing. Some of these lineups just have guys at the bottom that are slap hitters, punch and Judy, bat to ball kind of guys. The Dodgers don't have that. They have good hitters throughout the lineup. So, I think when you look at this team, when you look at the strengths of this team, there are a lot of them, for one thing, but I certainly think the lineup also a pretty big strength for them right now. The bullpen has been good. Obviously, seeing Clayton Kershaw was a treat. Really glad to get a chance to see him. But, excuse me, one of the things I really like about the Dodgers is that they have so much depth. The bench has good depth. We saw Kike Hernandez come off the bench, hit an oppo dinger off of Andrew Miller on Wednesday night that proved to be a very big hit in that game. And they've got guys that they can rotate in. They've got versatile position players. Chris Taylor is somebody that can play all over the diamond. They've got some guys that they can move around if they want to. Cody Bellinger plays a few different positions as well. I really like that. I like that from a team because you have options, you have versatility. It helps you from a platoon standpoint, and it really helps you when you get to crunch time in the playoffs when sometimes you have to pull that starter a little bit early. Well, maybe you don't have to lose a good hitter because he can play a couple of different positions. To me, right now, the Los Angeles Dodgers are the class of the National League. They are the Houston Astros of the National League, as far as I'm concerned. I know Washington's offense has been very, very good. They've got a good starting rotation, but the Dodgers just have so much depth in all the key areas. And also, I like manager Dave Roberts. Dave Roberts was very aggressive, and it was something that kind of caught my attention, and I reached out to a guy I know is a Dodgers fan on Twitter. In Tuesday night's game with Clayton Kershaw, the infield was in a tie game in the bottom of the first inning. Now, it's Clayton Kershaw. I mean, you can reasonably assume that Clayton Kershaw is probably not going to give up a whole lot of runs. You had Trevor Bauer going for the Indians, who has given up a lot of runs here this season. So you normally don't really see the infield come in a situation like that because managers want to try to avoid the big inning. If you give up a run in the first inning, you got 8 innings to come back and do some damage. If you give up 2, 3, 4 runs in the first inning because you know you kind of kickstart the inning by bringing the infield in because it makes hitters much, much better to have the infielders pulled in, that can be a little bit of a problem. But Roberts aggressive in that situation. Indians had a runner on third, less than 2 outs. He didn't score. Same thing in the bottom of the third with the Dodgers already up 2-0. The infield came in, runner on third, less than 2 outs, and Kershaw got out of that one as well. And I really like to see things like that. Think about a guy like Clayton Kershaw. Lots of strikeouts, lots of weak contact. You can afford to bring the infield in. There aren't a whole lot of guys in baseball that you're going to want to do that with. Roberts did it with Kershaw. It worked out for him. There was a ground ball in that third inning that would have scored the run if the infield was back at normal depth. But because the infield was in, Daniel Robertson had to stay at third. So I really like to see that. And also a lot of aggression on the base paths. Dodgers executed a perfect double steal yesterday. Chris Taylor wound up stealing home on an errant throw from Eric Gonzalez. They had a couple stolen bases on Tuesday as well. They push the pace. They push the game. When they've got a lead, they try to add on. I love that. I love to see things like that. You can say some things about Dave Roberts' lineup construction and some of the other, possibly some of the other choices that he's made, but I love seeing that aggression. I think the players feed off of it. I've said this before in the past. I think a lot of times players feed off of the mentality and the personality of their coach, of their manager. And if you got a manager that wants to take some chances, you're going to be more aggressive, but it's a controlled, smart aggression. And I really, really like that. I cannot sing the praises of the Dodgers enough here in this series. Brandon McCarthy didn't strike anybody out in yesterday's game, but still didn't give up many barrels. Rich Hill goes today. Alex Wood's been really good. Kenta Maeda and Hyunjin Ryu. The Dodgers don't have weaknesses right now, as far as I'm concerned. We'll see what they do at the deadline. Money, clearly no object for them. So if they want to go out there and get somebody, they obviously can. But the Dodgers, I've been very, very impressed with them in all facets of the game here in this series. On obviously their record for this year speaks for itself. Chicago Cubs, the reigning world champions, have dropped 2 of 3 here from the New York Mets. They blew a 4-0 lead in the series finale. I like the idea of Anthony Rizzo batting leadoff, but there are some other things about the Cubs lineup that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Ian Happ batting in a premier spot right now. Look, he's got good power. He's got very good power, and I think he'll have a good major league career. But right now, not a great average, low on base percentage. It's one of those things where he's still learning his way around major league pitching because it's very, very good. He'll hit a mistake, and he's done that already. Hit a grand slam in this series, hit another solo jack on Wednesday. But, you know, when you're the Cubs, and right now your margin for error is smaller than you're used to it being. They're not as good of a fielding team. The starting staff not nearly as good. Lineup construction really matters in a big way. And I like the idea of Rizzo batting leadoff, but then you bat a guy like Ian Happ second, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You know, they have other options that they can move up the lineup a little bit. So I think the Cubs, just some guess and check, trying to figure out some different things that work. We're seeing some regression from the Chicago Cubs, and that's expected. You know, we saw it from the Kansas City Royals as well when they went out and won their World Series in 2015, and everybody had a career year. Everything fell into place for them. And then now we've seen them over the last year and a half really, really struggle. You know, it's hard to be sustainably good over 162 games year in and year out, even when you have the talent level of a team like the Cubs. The Royals didn't have that. In fact, I think the Royals are one of the lesser teams in history to win the World Series based on their starting staff, you know, based on the lineup that they were trotting out there, even though some guys did have those career years. But the Cubs are still a top three most talented team in Major League Baseball. But we're seeing what happens when you take away some of those career years, when you make them average in other areas, and they're not a very good ball club right now. You know, a lot of things going wrong with this team. John Lackey did not pitch well in his start. He's got a 5.26 ERA. Kyle Hendricks is hurt. You know, they have a lot of problems right now. And The fortunate thing for them is that the NL Central is not very good. It's a lot like the AL Central for the Indians, where if you play with any reasonable level of competency after the All-Star break, you should win the division. And the Cubs should be in that position. The Indians should be in that position. But right now, not a very good look. And both of these teams are priced as if they're still these elite-level teams. And that's just not the case as far as things go here as of June 15th. Jacob DeGrom, complete game shutout in that series for the Mets. He's a guy to back. He'll be a little bit chalky as we go forward, but a 4.33 ERA, not at all indicative of how he's pitched. Now, the Mets did win this series, but Neil Walker left Wednesday's game with an injury. Steven Matz had a pinch hit appearance. Now, Steven Matz is a very important piece of this starting rotation because you've got Matt Harvey, who's had a couple of major operations, Zach Wheeler, who's had Tommy John. DeGrom is a guy that has stayed mostly healthy, fortunately, but they're without Noah Syndergaard right now. I don't get it. I don't understand why you would pinch hit an injury risk pitcher for one meaningless plate appearance. I don't get it. This Mets organization is a disaster. It is a dumpster fire. Terry Collins needs to be fired. He's really overusing some of the guys out there in the bullpen. Josh Smoker threw a career-high 81 pitches the other day, finds himself on the disabled list immediately after. It's a mess. It is reckless. It is embarrassing. They had to fire the training staff. They had to fire Terry Collins, start all over with this team. They've got some building blocks, but, man, their health track record with this team is it's abominable. It is awful. I'm not even a Mets fan. If I was a Mets fan, I can't imagine how pissed off I would be day after day with this organization and with how irresponsible they are with these players. It's just unbelievable to watch. We'll see what happens with them the rest of the way. Hopefully, we don't see a DeGrom injury or anything like that since we've already lost Syndergaard. But, man, All right, anyway, moving on. Twins and Mariners scoring all the runs here in this series. Mariners win 14-3 in Game 1. Twins win 20-7 in Game 2. More like a Vikings-Seahawks type of game there in that one. And then a Mariners 6-4 win in Game 3. We'll see what Game 4 has in store. It is a day game. This Mariners offense is really good. I told you that a while ago. If the pitching would be able to hold up, which it really hasn't been able to, the Mariners would be in pretty decent shape. But that's something that's really impressive here is that the Mariners, they lost 80% of their projected starting rotation very, very early in the season. James Paxton made a handful of starts and went out. Drew Smyly hasn't made a start yet. Felix Hernandez is on the shelf. Yet the Mariners are 33-34. A lot of credit goes to the front office. A lot of credit goes to Scott Servais and also this offense. It is really remarkable to me what this team has been able to do in the face of so many injuries. It's absolutely incredible, and I give them a lot of credit for that. The bullpen has also had some problems here as we've gone throughout the season, but the Mariners offense is legit. I don't know how many times you want to back them in a straight betting standpoint, but some team total overs definitely make sense, especially against bad right-handed starters. We saw some regression hit for Ervin Santana. That's not really a big surprise, but that's the angle I think I'd look to play with the Mariners right now. Team total overs against bad right-handed starting pitchers. I think you're going to find a lot of success with that. As far as the Twins go, they dropped to 13-20 at home with that loss last night. If the Indians ever show up, like I said, I think they blow by the Twins. But the Twins have some pitchers in line for regression. Good to see the offense get going there in Game 2. But then it was back to normal. 3 runs in Game 1, 4 runs in Game 3. The Twins offense is average. It's maybe a little bit above average from a weighted runs created plus standpoint. But when this pitching staff really starts to hit regression, and it is coming, this is a very middle-of-the-road type of team. I think we're seeing that sort of play out here a little bit in this series. One more series I want to touch on here. This is embarrassing for the San Francisco Giants. 2-game series against the Kansas City Royals, and the Royals won that series by an aggregate score of 15-3. Bunch of underachieving hitters for the Giants. Johnny Cueto not pitching well this season. He's got an ERA up in the 450 range. Didn't pitch well yesterday. The Royals had 35 at-bats in this series with a runner in scoring position. In a 2-game series, they had 35 at-bats with a runner in scoring position. They only had 7 hits in those situations. But, man, what a disastrous season this is for the San Francisco Giants. And I'll be curious to see what happens. I mean, they've put some money into this team. They've given extensions to guys like Brandon Crawford. They gave big money to Mark Melanson. You know, Madison Bumgarner is coming up on free agency here in a little bit, so we'll see what they do with him. But I'll be really curious to see how Brian Sabian works this thing, because the Giants have traditionally been a buyer. At this point, the Giants look like a seller. So I want to see what Sabian's willing to give up if he wants to upset the core of this team to try and change the culture a little bit. I don't know what they're going to do, but for the rest of the year, this looks like a fade team to me. Bruce Bochy may get this thing turned around. They just have a lot of underachieving players. When you get a team that's accustomed to winning and they're not doing it, it's a very tough team to gauge throughout the rest of the year. 60 games in, and the Giants already know that they're going absolutely nowhere this season. And that's a tough spot for a team to be in, you know, because they are well behind three teams out there in the National League West. The Giants are already 15 and a half games out of first place. They're 15 games out of third place. You're not used to that as the San Francisco Giants. So I'll be curious to see how they handle that adversity here throughout the season. And to me, I really don't think that they're a team that you can back in a lot of situations right now as things currently stand. We'll go down the lines, look at some line moves here that we've seen since Tuesday. Marco Estrada took on some money and got rocked again by Tampa Bay. Really surprises me because he strikes me as a guy that should have success there against a lot of left-handed hitters, but he just hasn't. Jacob Faria on the other side for Tampa Bay looked pretty good in that start against a solid Toronto Blue Jays lineup. Heavy move on David Price. He went from minus 230 to minus 270 or higher. Some places were as high as minus 300 there. That was Boston against Philadelphia. Not a big surprise with a move there. Again, it's one of those examples where if there's value on a chalky number, take it. If you've got the bankroll ability to take it, take it. You know, we're seeing some money coming on Chris Sale today, for example, against Nick Pivetta and Philadelphia. Look, if there's value at a minus 220 that's going to close minus 270 or minus 280, you got to do it. This game is all about finding value, all about looking for those situations where you can do something with your bankroll. Sometimes those situations come in those spots where you've got a favorite of minus 230, minus 220 or higher. If it's going to close higher, got to do it. So more Marlins money come in. That was Jarrell Cotton against Jose Urena. Marlins money has been a fixture out there in the marketplace this season, as I've talked about in the past. Massive fade of Derek Holland in the White Sox. That was against Alec Asher and the Baltimore Orioles. Didn't work. Holland pitched well in that game. Orioles are a bit of a mess. I talked about them on Tuesday as being an overachiever so far this year. That was sort of a microcosm of that concept. Saw money come in against Nick Martinez and the Texas Rangers. That actually didn't work. Houston wound up losing that game. Nick Martinez, you know, a guy that the market doesn't like. So when you see money come in against him, you know exactly what's going on there. Saw money come in against CC Sabathia as well. That didn't work out on Tuesday. Interesting one here. Both on Tuesday and Wednesday, we saw money come in on the San Diego Padres. We've actually seen Padres money come in fairly often here recently, mostly on Jahulis Chacin. Clayton Richard has taken on some money as well. That was the situation on Tuesday. We've also seen Luis Perdomo take on some money. Now, I'm trying to figure out what the rationale is behind this. Now, maybe that was just a fade of the Reds. Maybe people don't think the Reds are as good as they've played so far. I can certainly understand that. But I talked about the Pythagorean win-loss numbers for the Padres on Tuesday. Context is so important. They look like a team that should be a little bit better than they are. But this is what happens when you get blown out. You know, you have some outliers from a Pythagorean win-loss standpoint. So I'm kind of curious to see how this dynamic continues to play out. Because like I said, you know, they were three games better than their Pythagorean win-loss record. They get blown out a lot. And Pythagorean win-loss is based on run differential. When you get blown out a lot, like the Phillies last year, who I talked about on Tuesday's show, you know, the Phillies won 71 games, but had 62 wins, according to Pythagorean win-loss, because they got beaten badly so many times. The Padres kind of falling into that mold a little bit here now, where maybe they can be a little bit of an outlier, of an overachiever, because they lose games in such bad fashion, but they've got a pretty decent bullpen and an okay lineup. So maybe this is a Padres team that finishes 7, 8, 9 games better than their Pythagorean win-loss. They're not going to be a good team by any means, but maybe there is some value on that, some perception and reality differences there. Maybe we keep seeing the Padres take on a little bit of money, at least at home. I think that's something that we could, that we should watch for here in this down-the-line segment as we go throughout the rest of the year. Saw money come in against Julio Teheran on Wednesday. That fade didn't work. Tanner Roark took on the money there in that one. Braves actually won that series from the Nationals. Kind of speaks to a bigger thing about the Nationals, which I'll talk about here a little bit later in the show. Saw money come in on Jordan Zimmermann and the Tigers to fade Taijuan Walker and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Tough luck loss for Zimmermann, who actually pitched well. Taijuan Walker was a little bit better. Interesting to see Zimmermann money come in. I sort of wonder if this is a situation where the market's looking to buy at a guy or buy on a guy at his lowest point, because Zimmermann is not a guy that I have any interest in backing in any context whatsoever right now. But maybe the market was looking to fade Walker coming off the DL. I can certainly understand that. Cubs took on money yesterday. That was a Matt Harvey fade. They wound up losing that game. Saw some money come in on the Dodgers and Brandon McCarthy. I like Brandon McCarthy. I think Brandon McCarthy is really underrated this year, especially with some of the other big names in this Dodgers rotation. Corey Kluber pitched fantastic, but the Indians bullpen fell apart there in that one. Dodgers cast a nice underdog ticket for those that played that one. Normally, we would expect to see money come in against Dylan Bundy. Low ERA, high xFIP. This is traditionally a hallmark of line moves out there in the handicapping marketplace. But the fade of Miguel Gonzalez was stronger than the fade of Dylan Bundy's regression. The market has no interest in backing Miguel Gonzalez. Also, the market regularly fading the White Sox against right-handed pitching. So even though Bundy, with that low ERA, high xFIP, market still came in on the Orioles and Bundy a little bit there in that one. And again, I think we can continue to see that trend with the White Sox where they get faded against right-handed pitching. So if the White Sox are facing a righty, play the overnight line. You can always play back on it, buy out of it if you want to. But I think more often than not, you're going to get some line value going against the White Sox with right-handed pitchers on the hill. A little bit of money came in against Ervin Santana. And again, Ervin Santana, big-time regression candidate from an ERA to xFIP standpoint, as we already know. But the market wasn't too excited about backing Sam Gaviglio and the Mariners in that one. So it was a slight fade, but those that did play the Mariners cashed a nice little underdog ticket there in that one. Thursday, a couple of line moves going on. Indians and Dodgers, first pitch coming up here in about 20 minutes or so as I'm recording on Thursday, late morning, early afternoon. Seeing some money come in on the Indians and Josh Tomlin, that surprised me. We'll see what happens in that game. Saw some Jose Berrios money coming in to fade Seattle in that early getaway day game. Chris Sale, as I talked about with David Price earlier, becoming a bigger favorite against the Philadelphia Phillies. Seeing some money come in against Justin Verlander. Kind of looking really hard at Verlander at this point because I'm sort of wondering if this is just an aging curve situation. He's now thrown over 2,400 innings in his career, 227 and two-thirds last year, most he's thrown since 2012. Stuff doesn't look great for him right now. I'm going to be watching him very closely as we go throughout the rest of the year because 2 years ago he did this where he didn't pitch real well in the first half, pitched great in the second half. Maybe it was 3 years ago. I'd be curious to see if he can flip that switch. But at this point, in his age 34 season, with that kind of workload, maybe we're just seeing the end of Justin Verlander, you know, being a dominant type of pitcher. More money coming in on Sonny Gray. That's a fade of the New York Yankees. More of a buy of Sonny Gray. Gray, I think about a 4.37 ERA, 3.10 xFIP, somewhere in that range. Not a surprise to see that move. We've seen Gray take on money in just about every one of his starts here this season. So, again, I'm not particularly surprised with what's going on out there in the market with that. My pick for Thursday, going to be a little bit chalky here. We didn't hit the chalky pick on Marco Estrada on Tuesday, but I like this one a lot more. Jeff Hoffman and the Colorado Rockies over Matt Moore and the San Francisco Giants. When I was looking before the show, this number was around minus 145, minus 150. I would even consider the minus one, the minus one and a half in this spot. Hoffman's been very good. I talked about the Giants already. Not accustomed to being in this position. And for the Rockies, you know, no rest for the wicked here because they're in a three-horse race out there in the NL West, so they can't relax at all whatsoever. But the thing I really like about this game for the Rockies, and if you want, you can play that minus 150 and maybe do something with the team total over. Matt Moore, second to Ivan Nova in batted balls of 95 miles per hour or higher, second to Rick Porcello in number of barreled balls put into play, 10th in barreled balls per batted ball event, 9th in barrels per plate appearance, all of this coming from StatCast, all of this among pitchers with a minimum of 100 batted ball events. The overall theme here is that Matt Moore's at Coors Field. He's allowed a ton of hard contact. it is at Coors Field. Again, that Coors Field factor plays such a big role. I would fully expect the Rockies to do a lot of damage here offensively against Moore today. Hoffman's been really, really good. He's not walking people. Great strikeout-to-walk ratio. I think the Rockies are a good look for Thursday night. Again, I think some regression will come for the Rockies here at some point, but I keep finding spots to back them. And it's frustrating for me because I'm somebody that didn't like the Rockies before the season, had a lot of trouble with the Rockies early in the season, expected some regression. Now I'm having a little bit of a tough time trying to gauge them. But I think in this spot, pure fade of Matt Moore, it's a good place to take the Rockies. And again, I'd look at the -1, -1.5 if you don't want to lay the -150, the straight money line price. One thing I want to mention here before we take a look at the weekend, some pitchers that are getting really good run support and those that are not. There are 17 guys right now in Major League Baseball getting over 6 runs of support per 9 innings. They are Antonio Senzatella, Julio Teheran, Marcus Stroman, Jordan Zimmermann, Matt Harvey, Michael Pineda, Jake Arrieta, Dan Straley, Michael Fulmer, Zach Davies, Miguel Gonzalez, Masahiro Tanaka, Matt Shoemaker, Patrick Corbin, Jacob deGrom, CeCe Sabathia, and Gio Gonzalez. Now, again, there are some fade candidates in here. I've been looking to fade Antonio Senzatella, looking to fade Julio Teheran, Jordan Zimmermann, Matt Harvey. Jake Arrieta is a guy we've looked to go against here. Miguel Gonzalez has been faded in the market a lot. Masahiro Tanaka, just no command whatsoever. CeCe Sabathia has been faded in the marketplace. So look around for those guys that are getting a lot of run support. On the flip side, guys that aren't getting a whole lot of run support, there are 17 guys getting less than 4 runs of support per 9 innings. They are Jose Quintana, and these are in order of lowest to relative highest run support. And similarly, the last group was highest to lowest, at least of those guys still getting over 6 runs per game. But again, the 17 guys getting 4 or fewer runs of support per 9 innings are Jose Quintana, Ricky Nolasco, Gerard Eichhoff, Jeff Samardzija, Matt Cain, J.C. Ramirez, Carlos Martinez of the Cardinals, Jason Hamill, Matt Moore, Martin Perez, Clayton Richard, Rick Porcello, Garrett Cole, Jaime Garcia, Mike Leake, Marco Estrada, Danny Duffy. A few things to notice here. A couple of Cardinals out there, a couple of Giants, actually 3 Giants out there. So you've got some of these teams that have had some underachieving offenses. You know, Marco Estrada not getting much run support. That should probably change. So you got some guys out there that are probably worth backing that should get a little bit more run support. Jose Quintana definitely being one of them. He should get better and should get a little bit more run support just solely based on natural regression. Garrett Cole is another one. Rick Porcello is a guy I've been against a lot. He's given up a lot of hard contact. Again, he's up there number 1 in batted balls barreled up, but not getting a lot of run support. You generally don't see that from the Boston Red Sox. So there are some guys out there. And again, all this information available over at FanGraphs. I believe it's on the batted ball page where you can see the run support that guys have gotten. But keep an eye on these guys because perception and reality, as we know, can be very different. Some people still use win-loss record and ERA to handicap baseball. We know that odds makers don't go as deep as we do when setting numbers. So maybe there's some value to be had out there. Maybe there isn't. You know, some guys are getting a lot of run support. Some guys will keep getting a lot of run support. Some guys won't get a lot of run support throughout the year, but we're looking for different edges this season. That's why I've dug into the StatCast data so much. We're doing some more guess and check this year because our past methods aren't carrying as much weight. The league-wide home run increase, the line moves from ERA and xFIP. Again, if you're capable of hitting the overnights, you can get out in front of those line moves, get yourself some line value, and that's really good for you. And a lot of people that are able to do that have had a lot of success this year because they've been able to jump on those better numbers. If you don't have that ability or you want confirmation, you know, you want somebody to back you up, whether it's my article or this podcast or something else, that can be challenging for you. So that's why we're looking to find those different edges out there and maybe pinpointing some run support regression could be one of those different areas. So what are we looking at here for the weekend? Well, 3 series I've got my eye on, beginning with the Nationals and Mets. I told you I'd come back to the Nationals here. Max Scherzer, Steven Matz on Friday, Steven Strasburg, Seth Lugo coming back from the disabled list on Saturday, Joe Ross, Jacob deGrom on Sunday. Again, deGrom, a guy that I'm looking to back. The Mets are a mess, so it makes it hard to back them in any context. However, if you're the Washington Nationals, you're already up 8.5 games in this division. Do they put this thing in cruise control at any point? Do the dog days of summer catch up with them to the point where, you know, maybe they take a series off? Maybe they take a couple of games off. I think if they have this series won by Sunday, and they probably should, I think Jacob deGrom is 100% a guy to back on Sunday against Joe Ross in that game, because I think deGrom definitely pitching better than his metrics would indicate. But the Nationals, it's tough to back those teams because they're really good. They deserve the lines that they're getting. But again, at some point, do they back off, ease off the throttle a little bit? We got another one that's coming up here, but I don't think that they do it in this series. Cleveland and Minnesota coming up at Target Field. The Indians traditionally struggle at Target Field. I've been saying that they're going to flip the switch all year, but my good buddy Brian McPeak mentioned on Twitter yesterday, do they even care enough to look for the switch right now? You got to want to find the switch to be able to flip it. Four-game series here with a day-night twin bill on Saturday. Carlos Carrasco, Nick Turley on Friday. Ryan Merritt, Edalberto Mejia in the first game on Saturday. Mike Clevinger, Chris Heston in the night game on Saturday. And then Trevor Bauer, Kyle Gibson on Sunday. All of these pitching matchups favor the Indians. Ryan Merritt, unfamiliar left-hander, pitchability type guy, throws strikes, throws a lot of junk balls. Seems like a tough matchup for an aggressive Twins lineup as far as I'm concerned. This is a series where the Indians should play well. There's a very good chance that they don't, because they haven't played well basically throughout the season here up to this point. So I'm going to watch this one very closely. I don't know if I'll have a lot of betting interest in it, but I'll be watching this one very closely to see if the Indians can get this thing turned around. One thing to mention about the Indians here, one off day from June 12th to the All-Star break, equal number of games today is because of this doubleheader, at least barring some sort of other rainout. So Indians have July 3rd off, and then they don't have another off day until the All-Star break. So this is something that can snowball out of control for them. I'm going to break what I talked about in the first part of today's show and talk about the Indians a little bit here for a second. When they were in Colorado, Terry Francona made the decision with Mike Clevinger to intentionally walk Tony Walters to load the bases. Antonio Sensatella hit a three-run double. Francona wore that one. He took a lot of blame for that one, second-guessed that decision quite a bit. Since then, Francona has micromanaged this ball club. Andrew Miller's thrown over 100 pitches over the last 6 days after not getting steady work throughout. He's done a lot of unnecessary matching in the late innings of these two games against the Dodgers, where the Indians have trailed. In the eighth and ninth innings, they've trailed. And he's done a lot of matching up, really overusing the bullpen, really micromanaging. It feels like a little bit of a panic move to me. And again, as I've talked about, teams generally adopt the personalities of their coaches, of their managers. Francona's gotten a lot of praise over his years for being a very even keel type of guy. I think he's more of a friend than a manager a lot of times. Players say that he gets his point across effectively. I don't know if that's just lip service or what, because they really respect the guy. But Francona looks like he's kind of spiraling out of control with this team right now. You know, there was some talk that he's had some health problems. There was some discussion that maybe if the Indians had won the World Series last year, he would have retired. If the Indians win the World Series this year, he may have retired. There may be more than meets the eye with what's going on with this ball club behind closed doors right now. And I think that Francona's usage of the bullpen, some of his other decisions, some of the things he's been saying, some of the comments he's been making, speak to a manager that is looking for answers right now. And that's not a good thing. The Indians should be a well-oiled machine. They should basically run themselves. One of the things I loved about the Andrew Miller acquisition last year is that it took the decision-making away from Terry Francona. Francona is a great manager of men. He's not a great manager of ball games. I don't like his decision-making a lot of the times. I don't like how he pushes starters too far. I don't like how relievers can't come in with clean innings. I don't like how he leverages his relievers. He has no clue how to use Boone Logan. We've seen that throughout the season. These are all growing concerns for me. The nice thing is the talent is here to overcome that. The problem is Francona seems to be meddling. He seems to be overdoing it right now. And the players feed off of that. The players can sense that. Now, I give the Indians credit for not mailing it in over the last 2 days where they faced big deficits, hit a three-run homer on Tuesday night to make it close, battled yesterday in the eighth inning before Kenley Jansen shut them down. So I appreciate that. I applaud that. but there's a lot going on with this team right now. And one of the biggest factors about this team last year, everyone talked about, was the clubhouse chemistry. This team is not having fun. They don't look like they're having fun. They just don't look like a happy bunch right now. And that seems to feed into a lot of things. I think Francona is one of those managers who's very good when things are going well. He's very good at keeping the team high. I don't know if he's able to pull teams out of lows. And that's a test for him this season. When you look at how things went in Boston, he had a lot of clubhouse leadership. He had a very good team. And he didn't meddle in Theo Epstein's affairs. And it worked. But then as things started to change, you know, then the stories came out about players taking liberties with him. You know, all the stories that came out about him losing the clubhouse shortly before, you know, he wound up no longer being the Red Sox manager. The situation in Cleveland is kind of dicey as far as I'm concerned. Now, again, I don't have any inside info. I don't have anything from within the clubhouse, anything like that. These are all things that I've picked up on from watching every single game over the Terry Francona tenure. And also, you know, some of the things I see, some of the things I know from watching a lot of sports. It's a tough situation for the Indians right now. And that's why, you know, I don't think they're worth backing right now. There may be some value on them in certain spots, but they need to pull themselves out of this. And I don't know when that happens. I don't know how that happens. I'm not sure. But right now, it's not a good look. And this series upcoming, where they're the better team, they have the pitching matchup advantages, even with Corey Kluber not going in this series. This is a series the Indians should win 3 out of 4 games in, without question, as far as I'm concerned. But I don't know if they can do it. And that's the hard part. That's some of the next level handicapping that you're probably not going to find on too many other shows. It's just that, you know, I can apply the stats. You know, I can apply the eye test. I can do a lot of different things. But going deeper, you know, trying to find some of these things where you stay off of a game or play on a game, it's really important. And for me, it's doubly important because as a fan, this is killing me. It's absolutely killing me. They were supposed to walk to the Central Division title. They were supposed to play 162 games of training camp, get into the crapshoot that is the Major League Baseball playoffs, and see what happens. And it's not going that way right now. And there are a lot of reasons why. At first, I just chalked it up to the sequencing metrics, a lot of bad luck in high leverage situations, this and that. There's more to it than that. The answers are out there. I just don't think anyone has them right now. So it's a big series here for the Indians. I really want to see something out of them. I'm just not entirely sure that I'm going to see that. One more series here for this weekend, Boston and Houston. Drew Pomeranz, Mike Fiers, Rick Porcello, David Paulino, David Price, Joe Musgrove. That is Sunday Night Baseball. Boston travels to Kansas City. Houston goes all the way out to Oakland. So we could have a fade spot on Houston on Monday. It is Lance McCullers against a high strikeout lineup like Oakland. McCullers coming off the DL from a little bit of back discomfort. Could be a spot to play Oakland on Monday. If Oakland loses that game, I would definitely come back with Oakland on Tuesday. Again, a lot of times they say the second game is the harder one for those teams making long travel. Astros are going to get in very, very late to the Bay Area. A Boston-Houston game probably going to take about 3.5 hours. So game gets done about 11:30. Or about 10:30 Central Time, fly out to Oakland. That's, you know, probably 2.5-3 hour flight, a couple hours time change. No one gets excited to play in Oakland. Bad spot for Houston on Monday. So, again, that's why we look at these situational spots coming out of Sunday Night Baseball. We'll see what the situation looks like for Boston heading into Kansas City on Monday as well. So, again, we'll get back to normal next week with our Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format, have our Tuesday Takeover show. Not sure who that guest will be yet. We'll make sure we bring somebody your way. Please reach out with those Monday mailbag questions at Skating Tripods is the best way to reach me for that. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Better's Box.